As a longtime complementary medicine practitioner, I know how important it is to ensure that the supplements I prescribe are genuine, professional grade, and effective. That's why I use Fullscript as my online dispensary, so I can send my patients as well as Intelligent Medicine listeners the exact products they need. If you're a healthcare provider, do what I did and sign up for a free Fullscript account. Just go to fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. It's the easiest way for you to prescribe the exact supplement protocols your patients need. Fullscript is the most trusted source for professional-grade supplements. Sign up for a free Fullscript account at fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. That's fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're going to talk about environmental toxicity, and I can't think of a better person to cover this very, very encyclopedic subject than today's guest. He's just written a book entitled The Toxin Solution: How Hidden Poisons in the Air, Water, Food, and Products We Use Are Destroying Our Health, and most importantly, What We Can Do to Fix It. He's Dr. Joseph Pizzorno. And Dr. Pizzorno is one of my most esteemed colleagues. He's truly one of the seminal figures in this movement of integrative medicine. He founded and served 22 years as president of Bastyr University, which is the country's first and largest fully accredited university of natural medicine. He's also founder and board member of the Institute for Functional Medicine. Very, very influential organization that trains doctors, health professionals in functional medicine. He's editor-in-chief of Integrative Medicine, Clinician's Journal. He's also co-author of The Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine, and that sold over 2 million copies. And lately, he's turned his attention to the environmental toxins that undermine our health. So it's really a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine, Joe. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for your very kind introduction. I'm delighted to be chat with you today.
Yes, so let's get right to it. You know, recently I heard you speak at a conference in New York, the Integrative Health Symposium. And yes, you give a very, very fascinating talk because you have undertaken a huge study. I believe it's the first of its kind that links various forms of toxic exposure to health problems that commonly afflict Americans. Can you tell us about that project and what some of your findings were?
Well, thanks for asking about that, because I do indeed think this is important. So this all started for me about 10 years ago, really seriously. Now, as a naturopathic doctor and having been involved in medicine now for almost half a century, of course, I've always been aware of the significance of toxins for damage to people's health. So it's always been a given. But I hadn't realized just how bad it's gotten in our industrialized world. So I was doing a corporate wellness program in Canada where I looked at 4,500 oil field workers, and I ran about $1,500 of lab tests on every one of them. And I was testing for basically three things: nutritional status, toxic status, and metabolic status. And first off, in terms of nutritional deficiencies, I did not find a single person that did not have at least one nutritional deficiency. So that was very common. But what I found that really surprised me was how many people were showing signs of toxicity. So I started looking at the toxicity. I'm thinking, well, obviously the oil field workers, and you know, that must be where the chemical toxins are coming from. But then I actually went out with these guys into the field and realized that for this particular group, what they were typically relatively young men who get in their pickup truck in the morning, drive out to the prairies in Alberta, and check to make sure that the oil pumps are working properly. Mm. So they won't be exposed to anything, because they're very, very rarely would a pump be actually leaking oil. More likely just as the work and it's not pumping. So I then looked a little further and figure out, well, where are the chemicals coming from? Then I learned, after talking to several of these guys, that many of them were working in the oil fields to subsidize the family farm. So they had a farm that's been in the family for generations. Agriculture, big agribusiness, was making it more and more difficult for them to be viable. So they were working on their farms. And what did they do on their farms? they're spraying their food and the cattle with these herbicides and pesticides and all these other chemicals and things. And they were showing lots and lots of chemical toxicity, and that's where it's coming from.
So the order really, really was sad. Just a coincidence. It was just
a coincidence.
Yeah. Think, oh my goodness, they're exposed to a lot of industrial chemicals there, but no, in a more prosaic occupation, farming, that's where you get major exposure.
Yep, that's where it's coming from.
So
it's scary.
So you discovered pervasive toxicity. How did you determine whether there was toxicity? Are there any blood or urine tests that are readily available to tell some of our intelligent medicine listeners if they're toxic?
So there's two ways going about this. You can do kind of tests that tell you if a person is toxic, and you can also then directly measure what toxins people have. So what I was doing this procedure was I was measuring an enzyme in the blood called GDT. Mm-hmm. And as you know, GDT is a standard liver
test.
Enzyme.
It's not a very fancy
commonly available test. Yeah. Right. Commonly available test costs less than $10 typically. And it's normally only measured to see if a person has hepatitis. Because when a person's liver is damaged, then the liver cells start leaking enzymes. They show up in the blood and say, aha, lots of liver enzymes in the blood, person has hepatitis. But interestingly, within the normal range for the blood test, which is 10 to 60, it goes up in proportion to toxic exposure. And you might say, well, why is the liver enzyme going up in proportion to toxic exposure? Because our wonderful bodies, when we're exposed to environmental toxins, produce more glutathione to protect us from those toxins. And GGT is a key enzyme in increasing glutathione levels. And what it actually does is recycle glutathione, but the bottom line is it goes up in direct proportion to chemical toxic load. So I was looking at these guys and I'm seeing all this elevated GGTs, again, within the normal range, GGTs, within the normal range. So then GGTP, make sure I say it right. Mm-hmm. So it's gamma glutamyl transferase is basically the enzyme. So they're all having this toxic exposure. So that tells you that there's toxic exposure. Then another way of looking at this, again, doesn't tell what the toxin is, but tells you if they're being exposed, is look in the urine and look for something called 8-OHDG. And what that is a breakdown product from damaged DNA. And it turns out that goes up in direct proportion to people's exposure to metals and chemicals and oxidative stress and things of this nature.
Mm-hmm. Now, these, by the way, are not tests that are routinely performed as part of a chemistry, but they can be ordered by especially integrative or functional medicine doctors.
Yeah, so the GGTP is easily ordered because all labs have it. Mm-hmm. Not very many labs are doing the 8-OHDG, but a number are. For example, I use Doctors Data in Chicago because they run the test, because when I was doing this big corporate wellness program in Canada, I wanted to measure this, and no commercial labs were measuring the 8-OHDG. So I went to Doctors Data, my friend Dave Quigg over there, and said, hey, David, I want to run this test. He said, well, we don't run it. I said, well, how about if I bring you 4,000 samples, 4,500 samples. We run it then? Yeah. And of course, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So, when you undertook a study, and, I guess you had, some of the grad students there and students at Bastyr busily working away, looking at literally scores of studies, to see if there's any correlation between certain toxins that you've found in pretty ubiquitous in people. That
yes, exactly.
Related to diseases.
Yes, exactly. So I hired a couple of really bright Bastyr graduates. So I used all the money for my advance for the book, and I hired these people to help me answer the question, what percent of each chronic disease is due to specific environmental toxins? Because, for example, when I was looking at the diabetes epidemic, which is 20 times more common now than when I got involved in medicine half a century ago, diabetes is dramatically more common. And I started looking at people with the highest level of things like organochlorine pesticides, which are commonly used pesticides, and to see as well, when people have a lot of pesticides in their body, does it show up with more disease? Looking specifically at diabetes, and the research shows that people in the top 10% of body load of organochlorine pesticides have a 12-fold increased risk for diabetes. I mean, we're not talking about small increased factor, risk factors. We're talking about big, big factors.
So it's not just a matter of diabetes. We tend to think of it as just a matter of overweight or sedentary lifestyle, going on a low-carb diet, get on the treadmill. There are there's a pretty significant contribution from environmental toxicity, right?
Excellent. Exactly right. So, and let's look at that in particular. Let's look at obesity. Everybody knows that obese people have more diabetes. It's just well-known science. But what almost nobody knows is that if you look at the research closely, you'll see that obese people in the bottom 10% of body load of chemical toxins have no increased risk for diabetes.
Hmm.
You hear what I just said?
Okay.
It's not the obesity. Now, let me be clear. I'm not saying obesity is good for you, but I'm saying the obesity per se, what may contribute to it, in some ways, the obesity may be the body's adaptation to the high chemical load, and the body's putting all this fat in there to dilute the stuff because it's so hard to get rid of.
And there are what are called obesogens, which are certain environmental toxins that literally, you know, does this fruit or vegetable or processed food make me look fat? And it does. There are things in there, not just the caloric value, that may have an impact on your metabolism.
You got it exactly right. So what's happening is a correlation with diabetes and obesity with these chemical toxins is so strong that researchers are calling these, as you said, obesogens and diabetogens.
Hmm.
So anyway, so once you see these things directly increase the risk, then the next question is, well, can we kind of go backwards and say, well, if indeed these are increasing the risk for these disease, can we determine what percent of the disease is due to these toxins? And it turns out public health has formula for doing that. So I hired people to help me. We went through, we used that formula, and we then started going through very deeply into the medical research to answer that question. What percent of disease is due to toxins? And the numbers we found are just stunning. And I am asserting that at least half the chronic degenerative disease we see now in the industrialized world is due to environmental toxins. It's a very provocative statement, but as near as I can tell, it's accurate based on the research.
Now, do you have to be a farmer to be exposed to these organophosphates? I mean, clearly, if you're applying pesticides and herbicides to your crops, you're going to get a big load of that stuff. But what about the general populace, you know, people who just buy stuff at the grocery store?
All you have to do is buy conventionally grown foods, and you'll get lots of toxins. A study was done actually here in Seattle where they looked at kids who ate organically grown foods, compared them to kids who ate conventionally grown foods. And the kids eating conventionally grown foods had 9 times higher levels of organophosphate pesticides. And you might say, well, okay, is that so it's 9 times higher. Does that mean anything? Well, these kids also have a doubling of ADHD, and they also have a lower IQ because when they're being developing within their mother's uterus, if you've got neurotoxins like organophosphate pesticides around, it damages the ability of the brain to function properly, and you get a brain that doesn't work as well and manifests as lower IQ and more behavioral disorders.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you, so please listen up. As a longtime complementary medicine practitioner, I know how important it is to ensure that the supplements I prescribe are genuine, professional-grade, and effective. That's why I use FullScript as my online dispensary so I can send my patients, as well as Intelligent Medicine listeners, the exact products they need. If you're a healthcare provider, do what I did and sign up for a free FullScript account. Just go to fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. It's the easiest way for you to prescribe the exact supplement protocols your patients need. FullScript stocks the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere. The best part, FullScript sends out refill reminders, so it's totally effortless for your patients to stay on track with their supplement protocols. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA compliant, and they offer world-class support. Improve patient outcomes, rest easier knowing your patients are getting exactly what you prescribe them. FullScript is the most trusted source for professional-grade supplements. Sign up for a free FullScript account at fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. That's fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dr. Joseph Pizzorno. I'm looking at my latest dispatch from EWG, the Environmental Working Group, and they're famous for producing the Dirty Dozen compilation on a yearly basis. And they finger strawberries these days. 99% of strawberries, they say, have pesticide residues, including something called, see if I can pronounce it correctly, carbendazim. It's a hormone disruptor, bifenthrin, up to 22 different pesticides can be found on strawberries. And then you go down the list. Apples ranked fourth on this year's Dirty Dozen. 80% of the samples testing positive for diphenylamine. That's a chemical banned in Europe. Then there's spinach, up to 18 different pesticides found in a single spinach sample, including permethrin. That's a neurotoxin bug killer, not allowed on food crops in Europe. 76% of spinach samples. So, you know, pretty pervasive exposure.
Yes. That's the right way to say it. Pervasive exposure. It's everywhere. Now, obviously, you can decrease your exposure by eating organic-grown foods and supporting your body's own mechanisms for getting rid of toxins. But the bottom line is that if you're not being very careful, your body is full of metal and chemical toxins that are basically breaking your body and making you more susceptible to disease and actually inducing disease.
Where do we get the metals from? Because I frequently test patients for heavy metal contamination, and we're talking lead, mercury, cadmium, and others. And virtually everyone has some. Some people yes. have enormous amounts. And, you know, I asked yesterday a patient in my office, did he have a lot of industrial exposure? And they said no. They'd never, you know, they've always worked in an office, and yet they had very high levels of lead, sure. mercury, and, you know, toxic heavy metals. Where does that come from?
And obviously that's a very, very good question. So it depends on the toxin. So let's look at cadmium, for example. So it turns out that when you grow soybeans with high phosphate fertilizers that are contaminated with cadmium, which is a substantial portion of them, the cadmium gets into the soil, and for some reason, the bean family is very efficient at absorbing the cadmium. So you might say, okay, fine, so there's some cadmium there that's causing any trouble. So another study that was done in here in Seattle is they were looking at women with osteoporosis trying to find causes, and they found a very strong correlation between cadmium levels and osteoporosis. As a matter of fact, they assert that 20% of osteoporosis is due to cadmium. So they started going further and said, well, where's the cadmium coming from? And it's coming from these women who were eating basically soy and tofu from conventionally grown soybeans, and they got cadmium from it.
Hmm. I mean, is that a problem restricted to Chinese sources or American sources, or doesn't matter?
Doesn't matter. And, you know, most, I think, as you may know, the U.S. is a huge producer of soy.
Mm-hmm. Also, you tend to focus a lot on arsenic as a potential toxin. And, you know, sometimes we'll do a heavy metal analysis on a patient, come up with high levels of arsenic, and the first question that comes up is my wife trying to poison me? What's up with that?
Absolutely. That's a good one. So arsenic was my biggest surprise when looking at this research, because I had not been aware of the problem with arsenic. And so when I was looking at metals, I was looking at, you know, the big ones, lead, mercury, and cadmium. That's what everybody looks at. But then I noticed that the CDC ranks which are the worst toxins that we're being exposed to, and they had arsenic as number one. I said, wait a minute, arsenic's number one according to the CDC. What am I missing here? So then I started looking at the research and then worked with my team, and we started looking at the arsenic, and we found that actually if you had asked me which was the single worst toxin, I would have to say arsenic, because it shows up in most of these chronic diseases. And we're not talking about small effects. So, for example, based on looking at the research, it looks to us like one-third of prostate cancer is due to arsenic.
One-third? I mean,
these are big numbers. One-third.
Whoa.
Look at gout. Mm-hmm. 40 to 50% of gout is due to arsenic. And people say, well, wait, where's the arsenic coming from? You know, the joke I like is what you said, and that is not everybody's spouse is trying to kill them. You know, where's the arsenic coming from? And it turns out it's coming from, first off, water. 10% of the public water supplies in the U.S. have arsenic levels that are high enough to be known to induce disease in humans, and only half the public water supplies have even been tested for arsenic, okay? And then, if rice is being grown in water that has arsenic in it, even if it's not a lot of arsenic, the rice will absorb that arsenic very, very efficiently and gets it into our bodies. And then finally, up until just recently, the USDA allowed farmers to put arsenic into chicken feed in order to kill the parasites in the chickens and also to plump them up.
Whoa.
So it turns out if you're in a water supply with arsenic in it and you eat rice and chicken, you actually have pretty high levels of arsenic.
Yeah, and there was also some concern about applesauce. There was a first disclosure by Dr. Oz that there was arsenic in applesauce. Everybody freaked out. And then he had under pressure, he had to recant. Is that a problem?
Is that a problem? Is it the recanting the problem or not being allowed to tell what's true the problem?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think they're both problems. I think that there's pressure from industry sometimes to minimize these risks, but are apples and applesauce potentially a source of exposure?
So I know that apples, as you mentioned before, are high on the Environmental Working Group's list of contaminated foods. I haven't looked at arsenic levels in apples specifically, so I can't comment on that. I don't know. I would not be surprised, but I just haven't looked at that particular data.
I'm just surveying some headlines recently that really underscore your point in the book. Here's one from Netherlands. Air pollution linked to brain alterations and cognitive impairment in children. The study examines the relationship between air pollution exposure during fetal life, brain abnormalities, and cognitive impairment. That's not good.
Oh, it's extremely scary, and there's tons of data on that. And another one of my big surprises was particulate matter. So, you know, when the diesel's going down the road and you see all this blue-black smoke coming out, you think, well, that can't be good for you. And the answer is, yes, it's not good for you. The diesel fumes are high in a particulate matter called PM 2.5. The 2.5 refers to the size of the particulate matter, the particle size, right? So 2.5 microns. Now, why that's important is that when it gets that small, it actually bypasses most of the physical protective barriers in our lungs. You know, we have, you know, in our respiratory tract, we have these little cilia that try to wash the garbage out of our lungs, keep our lungs clean, because, you know, there's always been dust and things like that in the air. Well, the problem with these really small particles is that they bypass that process and get deep into the lungs, and they're actually absorbed directly into the body. Mm. This research has been done in animals.
In effect, I mean, you think that they're in the air, but they literally go into your bloodstream. They circulate through your arteries. They can cause a vasospasm or endothelial injury. So they literally can give you heart disease.
You're clearly knowledgeable. This is great. So and that, in fact, that's what happens. And for example, animal studies show that when you expose an animal to particulate matter, like you see living near a highway, the particulate matter is actually found in the animal's brains within 2 hours of breathing the stuff into the body. So it goes, you know, we think about a blood-brain barrier, it's supposed to be this perfect impermeable membrane to keep those toxins out. It's not. It allows these things in. I mean, clearly it's doing some cleaning, but a bunch of it gets into the body. It's easy to get depressed when you start looking at all this research.
Here's another one I'll run by you. It's headline, dining out associated with an increased exposure to harmful chemicals. This one's from George Washington University. And the concern is that burgers and other foods consumed at restaurants, fast food outlets, or cafeterias associated with higher levels of phthalates. That's hard to pronounce. P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S. What the heck are phthalates, and why are they pervasive in restaurant food?
Yeah, extremely good question. And it's unclear why that's the case. I'll just be just totally honest with you about this. We're seeing phthalates in a number of foods, and it's unclear where they're coming from. And they're showing up in organic foods, which is really surprising because, in general, organically grown foods don't have the chemicals and metals. Mm-hmm. So it's one which it's on my radar screen. I'm aware of it. I haven't done enough research to track down exactly what's going on, but it is cause for concern.
But in general, it's a pretty good idea to prepare your food at home because you have more control over it. And besides, portion control is a little better. And, you know, the ingredients are pure and you know what's going into it.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Another headline that's got me going a little bit. Top bottled water brands contaminated with plastic particles just came out last month. Widespread contamination with plastic was found in the study. It was done at State University of New York at Fredonia. Researchers tested 250 bottles of water across the world, Brazil, China, India, many other countries in the United States, and they found plastic in 93% of the samples, including major name brands such as Aqua, Aquafina, Dasani, Evian, San Pellegrino. Hey, you're paying big bucks for that bottled water.
Yes, cause for concern. I should say this. If you came into our house, you would not find a single plastic container in our house. Mm-hmm. All our containers are glass. And not only that, we're even trying to get glass lids as well for these things. Our environment is progressively more and more contaminated, not just with chemicals as chemicals and metals as metals, but now we also have then actual particles of plastic in our food supply and in our water. It's contributing to all this disease we're seeing.
Okay. Well, you know, you're painting a pretty grim picture, and we don't want to make people feel phobic about existing, because, you know, these are pervasive influences. You can run, but you can't hide. In part two, we're going to talk a little bit about solutions. What can you do to, A, minimize your exposures, and, B, how can you rev up your detoxification pathways? The body has a way of dealing with these toxins. It's just sometimes we gum up the works, and we want to get those toxins out. So we'll talk to our guest, Dr. Joe Prizzorno, about some of the solutions that he provides in the toxin solution. Yes, you know, he decries a lot of hidden poisons in the air, water, and food and products we use, but there are also some ways we can improve and reduce our toxic burden. We'll talk about that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.